Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Again, the Middle East is gazing into the abyss. High-level assassinations see the region going up the escalation ladder. We are faced with the question, who wants a greater war, and which is the single country that can stop one? Crosstalking the Middle East, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Beirut, we have Leila Hartoum. She is editor-in-chief of MENA Uncensored. And in Rome, we cross to Romano Ribeiro. She is an author and the managing editor of the Palestine Chronicle. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Beirut first. Leila, can you explain to me the logic of these assassinations? Of course, I'm making reference to the high-level assassination in Beirut, where you are right now, and of course in Tehran. What is the strategic logic behind it? And does it make, obviously the perpetrator of this is Israel, does it make Israel any safer?
I'll start from the last question first. It doesn't make Israel any safer. In fact, it's going to drag on its own population, retaliation from all the axis of resistance across the region. Now, to think about it as a logical thing, it is illogical in basically in the common sense that everybody shares. But when it comes to the Israeli entity, they don't think common sense. They are an occupation at the end of the day. They are always the aggressor. So the way we look at it, there are three points that push the Israelis towards doing these basically aggressions against Lebanon, against basically Iranian territories, assassinating Haniya, and at the same time, basically doing the ongoing genocide in Gaza. They to save face in front of their own population. I'm talking about the government, Benjamin Netanyahu. He has been shown as a weak person throughout. Even when the Congress was clapping for him, the majority of the population on the ground, the real people, they didn't believe it. It was paid ad at one point or another. AIPAC paid for the Congress to clap for him. But in reality, his people are divided. There's a possibility of civil war happening in the Israeli entity. And he needs to show that he's a macho, victorious person who can actually deal basically a severe blow to his enemies. When he assassinated Hezbollah's head of basically the precision missiles project, and he's one of the top senior commanders in Hezbollah, this came after Lebanon had warned the Israelis, if you touch Lebanon or Beirut suburbs, southern Beirut suburbs, this will be a red line and the retaliation will be beyond red lines. And yet they committed it. Why? Because one, they're desperate. They need to save face in front of their own people. They actually used a very stupid and weak excuse claiming that Hezbollah killed children in Marj al-Shams, which is a town that's pro-Syrian, it's against the Israelis. So they're claiming blood that basically the people, the parents of those children, they don't support the Israeli entity. And they committed that hit. The second hit against Haniya, that was an aggression beyond any aggression. First of all, he's a seated prime minister. Think about it. He enjoys immunity. He was in a third country. So basically, they breached the sovereignty of Iran. So they hit Iran and Haniya in one blow.
Well, Leila, obviously, the Israel is looking for a response from Hezbollah and from Iran. And of course, this is a nod to the United States, which of course Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, came out and said, we will stand by Israel. So Netanyahu seems to have gotten what he wants for now. Let me go to Rome here. Romana, I mean, these assassinations, it shows capacity, the ability to do this, but you know, we've seen a long history of these assassinations, and the next person in line steps up. Nothing really changes here, except for it puts everybody on a trigger. Go ahead, in Rome.
Absolutely. I totally agree with the fact that there is no logic, or at least no logic aside from the reasons of the occupation, which since the beginning of this war is trying to obtain one single goal, which is that of restoring deterrence and the military superiority in the region. That goal has been completely smashed on October 7, and it continues to be crushed on every single day in the last 10 months. And, you know, we see Netanyahu desperate to go to the Congress to, as Ramzi Baruch put it, push the reset button and pretend that everything is okay, nothing is okay. Of course, they keep doing these kind of operations, I am sure, with the help and the support of foreign intelligence, and I mean US intelligence, to show that they are achieving some kind of deterrence, but nothing is going to change. We are reading these days these statements. We are very close to dismantling Hamas. But if we see the timeline of the assassinations over the last 20 years, how many Hamas leaders have been assassinated without changing anything on the ground? To the contrary, it changed at the opposite, because the Al-Qassam brigades and the axis of resistance became stronger and stronger. So this is an extreme act of desperation. It is a criminal act, of course, as it was highlighted before, but it's an act of desperation on the Israeli side.
Yeah, only two countries do this in the world. It's the United States and Israel. Lionel, Netanyahu's address to Congress has already been mentioned here, probably the most disgraceful hour in congressional history. And remember, we had slavery in the United States. But, I mean, it seems very interesting is that, you know, that was one of the reasons for the visit to Washington. He got the green light to expand this war. To what degree, we don't know. But the timing is no coincidence. When it comes to these things, there are no coincidences. Go ahead, Lionel.
Well, a couple of things. First, the reaction was less than lukewarm, whatever that is. You had people like Nancy Pelosi and others objecting to it, not because of him, but because he didn't deal enough with the hostages. I don't even know what that means. But as you know, Peter, the view from the fishbowl, I bring to you this. This past week, as America is trying to figure out what exactly happened regarding this assassination attempt against President Trump, it has been posited, it has been suggested that Iran had something to do with it, that Iran was somehow involved. Now,
well, Lionel, if I could interrupt you, if for a change, yes, it wasn't Russia that did it. Okay, anyway, go ahead, right. Lionel.
Well, but inspired by, who knows? I'm trying to think like this. So anyway, so I would tell friends of mine, so let me get this straight. Is it incorrect for a sovereign nation to systematically, or to attack or attempt to assassinate a head of state of another nation, sovereign otherwise? Yes. Unless, and then we get into the U.S., unless it is a terrorist organization. People think, Peter, as you know, that Hamas and Hezbollah, that these are the Hell's Angels, the Klan, these amorphous group of ragtag terrorists with no governmental connection whatsoever, and that anything that happens to them, any Hellfire missiles, it's precision, good for you, go. However, if anybody were to return the favor, it is verboten. And it's that for thee and not for me, attitude that unfortunately some of my fellow fishbowl patrons or bowl mates don't really understand the hypocrisy of this. It's,
well, I mean, Lionel, the fact of the matter is, and one of the reasons why I like having you come on so much, is that Americans are essentially oblivious because of their media and because of AIPAC and all the other lobbyists here. They're oblivious to the fact that we're just a stone's throw from a major war, which Israel will drag the United States in. The United States, only in this case, lacks any kind of will. Let's go back to Beirut. Leila, I mean, is Israel just begging for another April 19th for Iran to send missiles and drones over Israel again? Is it the reason, and asking and doing that would pull the United States in? This is what Netanyahu has wanted for his entire political career.
Well, from what we're seeing on the ground, it's not basically just targeting Iran and begging for Iran's reaction. The U.S. gave Israel the green light to go and do these assassinations and these aggressions. And we heard it from the Israelis themselves when they said they actually informed the U.S. that they're going to deal a blow to the Beirut southern suburb, which is the stronghold of Hezbollah. And the Americans said, okay. So that was the first green light. When it came to Haniya, we have indicators from inside the Israeli entity that the Americans were informed, despite the fact that the State Secretary of Defense said, no, we weren't informed of this. But the idea is all these attacks that happened within the span of 10 hours from each other, including the attack on Iraqi resistance, Hajj al-Shaabi, overnight, shortly before Haniyeh was assassinated, they were all by an American green light. So the Americans have given the green light to the Israelis to escalate the situation in the region. Remember, Iranian response was, we're going to deal a series of harmful or painful blows to the Israeli entity. Then they came out and said, every single U.S. asset in the region will be under attack if the Americans take part in this. And if you remember, the first second after the Israelis actually assassinated Fuad Shukr of Hezbollah, what did Kamala Harris say? She went out and said, oh, the diplomatic solution is the best solution, but if anything happens to the Israelis, we're going to stand by Israel and defend it. So she's trying to warn Hezbollah against attacking after they were being attacked, but she's trying to say to the voters, look, we're looking for diplomatic solutions, but if Hezbollah attacks, we're going to stand by the Israelis.
Well, of course, Leila, I don't even think Kamala Harris even knows where Palestine is, so I don't think we need to waste a lot of time on what she has to say. Romana, I mean, what's going on here? I mean, you kill negotiators. I mean, so you don't want negotiations. I mean, this is just bizarre. I mean, I'm basically paraphrasing the Qatari foreign minister. I mean, that also was an objective here. No negotiations, no ceasefire in Gaza. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the advancement or the progress in negotiations was one of the reasons why Ismail Haniyeh was killed, because Israel doesn't want that, or at least a part, the Israeli government, the current Israeli government, doesn't want to negotiate. They want to prolong the war for several reasons. First of all, the political survival of Benjamin Netanyahu. And, you know, there are many, the hostages here are, you know, people who are trapped in this political survival of Netanyahu as a strategy. The real hostages are the American citizens who will be dragged in something that maybe they're not even aware of the consequences of what is happening. Another reason, I think, was the process of national unity that Ismail Haniyeh was leading, with the signing even in Beijing of a very important agreement among the Palestinian political groups. So all of these
I have to jump in here. We have to go to a break. I'll come back to you when we return. But when we return, we'll continue our discussion on the Middle East. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing developments in the Middle East. Okay, let's go back to Rome. Before we went to the break, we were talking about motivations here. Obviously, I don't believe a word that Anthony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, says about anything. So, I mean, just, you know, cross that off. But what is really interesting here is that Israel wouldn't be making these moves without the knowledge of the United States, which obviously is a green light. And so, essentially, and what we have now, we have Western countries telling their civilians to get out of Lebanon. Obviously, that is an indication as well. Romana, what is the calculation here? Is that, you know, Hezbollah is going to stand down, Hamas is going to stand down, and Iran is going to stand down? I don't see that at all. As a matter of fact, what I think is the bigger picture in all of this is that the Israelis look at this as an opportunity to get rid of all of their enemies with America's help. But the axis of resistance is much more coordinated now than ever before. I mean, this is a train wreck for everybody involved in the region. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Israel seems to, you know, it's playing a very high stakes gamble here. But of course, like, it doesn't seem that things are going very well for Tel Aviv, at least to this point, because every calculation so far has not been really, you know, good for them. From a logical point of view, maybe they should try to stop the war and try to put together what they have and try to recollect the pieces. But what they're doing, they're provoking even more, and it really makes no sense. But because they want to drag other actors, and namely the United States, in an all-out war, in a direct confrontation. So they are in a quagmire in Gaza. They are in an even worse quagmire in northern Israel with Hezbollah, and they're trying to drag new actors. I know it seems that it makes no sense at all, but as we said before, Israel has, you know, a tradition of making things that make no sense friends and, you know, basically playing these kind of gambles to try to survive.
For well, this is a perfect storm. You have fanaticism in Israel, and you have the fanatics in the White House, in the State Department. I mean, this is something that they've been angling for a very long time. And, well, what's Joe Biden doing? Nobody knows, and actually nobody really cares. We have the election going on. And Lionel, you know, Kamala Harris's name has already been mentioned here. Traditionally, in American elections, American Jews vote Democrat. But because of the position of the Biden administration and the ongoing genocide in Gaza, we see some defections. How much does that play into the election calculus in the U.S.?
Well, huge, huge, or as we say here in New York, huge. You know, you mentioned Kamala Harris. Peter, one of our themes has been everything has changed. As Schwab said, this is the Great Reset. First point, if I played to you what was said a week after October the 7th, and I played for you the official press narrative from October the 7th through now, you would not be able to tell what people are saying today, 300 days afterwards, versus October the 7th. The narrative, Peter, is incredible. It is airtight. It is memorized. It is rote. It is Pavlovian, this obeisance to this narrative. That's number one. Number two, they're referring to Kamala Harris as a San Francisco liberal. And many of my friends are saying, if only she was. The term doesn't even apply anymore. You also had the other day, one week we had Rashida Tlaib, the woman who was considered to be the most reviled anti-American, who had a paddle, like she was at an auction, who had genocide on one side and a war criminal on the other. The only one who showed up from the squad. So you have this fracture within the Democratic Party, the AOCs and others. Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar, I don't know where they are.
They're all cowards. They're cowards, okay? They're
so
cowards.
So you're asking, what's going to happen? I'm telling you, I'm embarrassed to tell you and our colleagues here, but in my fishbowl, nothing has changed. Nothing. They don't know anything about this. This is a war against terror, and Israel has the right to defend itself. And you keep saying these things over and over again. And Peter, from our generation, this is what they did to us during Vietnam.
Yep.
We exactly the same thing. And that was a form of, I don't know if it was genocide, but it was a war crimes. And we sat through this obeisance then too. So politically, it's going to destroy the Democratic Party. Destroy it, because the young people out there, they're not forgetting this. They're ready to go.
Well, I agree with you, Lionel. I wish it would destroy the Republican Party, but we'll get there, okay? Leila, is, in your opinion, in looking at what's going on in the region, do you believe that Iran, because it's being reported by mainstream media, which of course we discount heavily here, but that Iran may repeat in some form or another what happened on April 19th?
We do believe that whenever the Iranians actually make a threat, they carry it out. So they made a promise that they're going to attack the Israelis through a series of attacks that will be painful to the Israeli entity. Now, it could be just like the last time, but I highly doubt it. They're not going to send drones that take hours before they hit and they play as a decoy for the ballistic missiles to hit their final target. I do believe that they're going to target Israeli interests in the region. Remember, the Israelis, they do have an espionage base in Dohluk Island, that's basically in the Red Sea, off the coast of both Djibouti and Eritrea at one point or another. And then they have also interests elsewhere in the Horn of Africa and across the GCC. So you never know, they might hit the Iranian entity, they might hit outside it. That's the first thing. But that will lead to an escalation that will push the Americans to take part in it, because the American Secretary of Defense said that we will support and protect the Israelis in case there was an attack against them. So basically, this is just to drag the Americans into this war, and it will be a regional war over here. The Iranians will hit, and the axis of resistance, they have to retaliate. Don't forget, the Yemenis have vouched to retaliate for Hodeidah. The Lebanese have vouched to retaliate either in Haifa or Yafa for any attack against the southern suburbs, and this is what we saw. And then basically we have the Iraqis vouching to attack the Americans and the Israelis over what happened to Hajj al-Shaabi, and then Iran vouching to attack the Israelis, and they all will do it either in one blow or through a pipeline, because we were speaking to one of the generals from Ansar Allah, Houthis in Yemen, and he said, if the situation deems that we all deal it as one blow, we will do it. But if the situation deems that each one deals a strong blow against the Israeli entity and the American interests, we will do that.
Leila, let me stay with you for a second. I don't know how to phrase this here, but the Biden administration attempted this ridiculous $300 million off of the Gaza coast. It didn't last very long, broke up after a few days, and everybody's kind of forgotten it. What does that tell you about the logistic ability of the United States if Israel is going to drag the United States in? I mean, they can't build a pier, but they're going to bomb Iran. How do you balance those two things?
I'll give you something better. They couldn't take over Houthis, which are the least armed in the region.
Good point.
For the past month, and now basically they want to take over Iran. That's the first thing. Iran has ballistic missiles, hypersonic missiles, and basically advanced weapons, including stealth drones, you name it. And they are the ones who are arming all the axis of resistance across the region. That's the first thing. But when it comes to the pier, I kind of disagree with you over here. The pier was done to actually bring in military equipment so the Americans can build a nucleus for their military base in Gaza. And this is what they did. The Netzarim corridor has the main U.S. military base that has espionage units and everything that costs about $100 million out of the $320 million they paid for the floating port and pier. Now, yes, we saw some parts where we're shifting, but those parts were, you have to remember, it's like a Lego. It's a floating port and pier. So when you have tide, when you have waves, you tend to have some parts of the Lego missing. They kept taking it in and out due to the weather situation, but recently they just dismantled all of it because they said they don't need it anymore, which means they have already set their nucleus over there.
Okay, well, also the pier was probably designed to get Palestinians out, not to get aid in. Ramana, you know, Israel has survived since its inception on its use of deterrence. That deterrence was shattered on October 7th. Do you see any situation in which we'll regain that kind of deterrence? It seems like we're in a totally new world now.
It seems that the more Israel does things, the less the possibilities of retrieving that deterrence power, are present, are there. Honestly, I feel that, you know, all the fronts that Leila was mentioning, Israel is under a lot of pressure from the outside. There are many open fronts. There are pressures from the inside because yes. Israeli society itself is imploding, basically. It's, you know, collapsing under the weight of its own contradictions. Let's see what happened when they arrested 9 Israeli soldiers. And they are arresting these 9 Israeli soldiers not because the Israeli state is so respectful of the law, of the rule of law. They're doing that to tell the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court, no, we are totally able to deal with our own criminals by our own. And we all know
that. Well, Ramana, I'm glad you brought it up, and we're rapidly running out of time. But we all know, those that care and actually make an effort to find out, is the lawlessness of the settlers in the West Bank. Who would have thought that the same lawlessness from those settlers would be brought into Israel proper, okay? They've actually imported lawlessness that they promoted on the West Bank. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. They created their own Frankenstein, in a sense. And now, it's very difficult for them to manage. The scenes that they were coming, if it was in any other country in the world, we would have thought about a coup. But nobody was mentioning that. Mainstream media didn't mention the word coup, God forbid. It was the Israeli themselves who said, Yair Lapid and others, and the Labor Secretary who said there was an attempted coup, because during these scenes, while the settlers were basically attacking and assaulting this military base, the police wasn't present because Itamar Ben-Gvir, the far-right minister, decided to delay the arrival of the police. That was a coup, of course, but nobody is mentioning that. So Israel is under a lot of pressure from the outside, from the inside, even financially. The first factor that will put an end to this war is the resistance on the ground in Gaza, in Lebanon, and throughout the region, as we mentioned before, because this will increase the pressure, and Israel cannot survive forever under this kind of pressure.
All right, we're rapidly run out of time here. My parting note on all of this here, I don't see the axis of resistance backing down. Buckle up, everyone, and brace for impact, because this is the beginning of something, not the end of something. That's all we have for this program here. I want to thank my guests in New York, Beirut, and in Rome. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.